The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It's Ask the Lawyer with Mike Connors. Got questions concerning elder or estate law? Attorney Mike Connors has the answer. He's been recognized as one of New York's top lawyers by New York Magazine and brings over 30 years' experience to the table. Call him now at 866-970-9622. That's 866-970-9622 and Ask the Lawyer. Here's Mike Connors.
We are gathered here on hallowed ground. Horses ring.
Well, welcome to Ask the Lawyer with me, Mike Connors, accompanied by my wife, Beth.
Hello.
Okay, now, those of you who know this show, the first part of the show, we talk about estate planning and elder law. The second part, we talk about history, politics, religion, and tonight, we're going to be talking about history. We've got the immortal Ed Barz on our show talking about the Battle of New Orleans. Now, the Battle of New Orleans happened a little over 200 years ago, War of 1812, and it was the last significant battle of the war and the most significant American victory up to that time, and maybe of all time, it's the most significant American victory. And, of course, Brian Kilmeade right now has his book on Andrew Jackson, The Battle of New Orleans. So I recommend you take a look at that. But the idea behind estate planning is to pass assets from one generation to the next, paying the least amount in taxes we need to pay legally, avoiding going through court, avoiding probate, and as far as elder law is concerned, trying to save assets from nursing home bills. Now, each week, we take email questions on the Kevin McCullough Show. And if you want to email your question to either through Kevin or through us, email it to theanswer@connorsandsullivan.com. Theanswer@connorsandsullivan.com. And can we hear Kevin's question this week?
Hi, Kevin McCullough. You hear me talking about getting your legal questions answered every week with Ask the Lawyer's own Mike Connors, and he rejoins us. Mike, this question this week comes from Melissa. She says, my brother and I co-own a two-family house. Both of our names appear on the deed. He'd like to remove his name from the deed so that I could own it outright. We've already agreed on an amount. The mortgage is only under my name. Could you please provide some basic info on how I can go about getting this done, and would there be any repercussions? Thanks, Melissa. Mike Connors, what do you say? Okay.
Well, it's pretty easy to get it done. All we would need to do is sign a deed from brother and sister to sister, so that wouldn't be a problem. Repercussions are, what is the tax basis in the property? Did they inherit the property? Did they buy it? Does the brother live in the property? In other words, if he lived in the property for more than 2 years, it's his primary residence, he would get the first $250,000 of capital gain or not taxed. Because if you sell your personal residence, the first $250,000 of capital gain is not taxed. If you were married, the first $500,000 of capital gain would not be taxed. So did they inherit the property? Did they buy it? There are tax ramifications, but they may be very neutral.
It sounds like Melissa needs to call the office directly and get a follow-up with some of your crack staff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're hard answers, but at the same time, you have to figure out if there's any tax due and if there's a way to minimize the tax that might be due.
Yeah, and no one's going to be better at figuring that stuff out than the great team at Connors and Sullivan. And friends, here's the number. If you have questions, call them for yourself and get them answered. Get an appointment at any one of their convenient locations. 718-238-6500 is that number, 718-238-6500, 718-238-6500. And if you've got a question for Mike Connors that you'd like to hear answered here on the air, email him at mikeconnors@gmail.com. That's mikeconnors@gmail.com. Mike Connors, thanks for all your help.
Thank you, Kevin.
Okay, so that's Kevin McCullough. You can hear him 970 The Answer each day, Monday through Friday at 5 o'clock. Let's try to squeeze Bill in from Brooklyn. What's your question, Bill?
Yeah, Mike, I have power of attorney, and I got the power of attorney from an American veteran. Mike, he's going to get a decision in a week and a half, and a letter.
Yeah, I think we lost Bill there. Beth? Now, you spent a little bit of time in your youth in New Orleans, right?
Oh, yes. Goodness gracious. Dad was in med school, and I loved it. And we went to Jackson Square, and I remember the statue. And, of course, when I was little, it was huge.
Yeah, and, you know, again, the Battle of New Orleans, there was a Battle of New Orleans in the Civil War. And ordinarily, because I'm president of the Civil War Roundtable of New York, most of our speakers dwell on the Civil War. And actually, Ed Barrs usually dwells on the Civil War. But he does know a lot about history in other parts of, you know, in other wars or whatever. So tonight he's going to share with us his knowledge of the Battle of New Orleans. And I know some of you out there know exactly who Ed Barrs is. Some of you out there have no clue who Ed Barrs is. And basically, he was a National Parks historian. The head National Parks historian was with the National Parks Department for 50 years, wounded in the Battle of the Solomon Islands. His left arm was practically torn off. And he went to college on the GI Bill, went to Georgetown, got a job with the National Park Service, stayed there for 50 years, and in the meanwhile, memorized every battlefield report going back to the Civil War. And then when he got all the battlefield reports memorized from the Civil War, he started going to the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812 and the Indian Wars, and started learning about European battles and World War II battles and so forth. So if you haven't heard Ed Barrs, he's a real treat. I know it's on radio, but I can tell you right now, Ed Barrs does not refer to notes. He refers to his memory.
And I know it sounds like, just hang in there. I know radio is supposed to be fast, fast, fast. This is a lovely speaker, and just hang in there and listen to the whole thing. It's wonderful.
Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back in a few minutes. You're listening to Esther Laurie with me, Mike Connors.
The Guild for Exceptional Children, or GEC, has been providing excellent care to children and adults with developmental disabilities since 1958. It is our mission to help build better lives and brighter futures for the people in our care. We serve nearly 1,000 individuals each day and are proud that 90 cents of every dollar is used for actual services. Please visit www.gecbklyn.org or call 718-833-6633 to learn more.
Mike Connors, host of Ask the Lawyer and published in New York Magazine's top-rated lawyers. Whether assisting a client with drafting a will or trust, power of attorney, health care proxy, nursing home plan, or other matter, Connors and Sullivan's goal is always the protection of their clients' rights and interests. Connors and Sullivan Attorneys at Law, PLLC, has dedicated attorneys that can help you with estate planning, elder law, and probate. They listen to their clients to learn about their families, their financial picture, and their long-term goals to create a comprehensive plan to meet your objectives. They assist with the complex tax matters that are often involved in estate planning and probate. Contact Connors and Sullivan Attorneys at Law, PLLC, with offices in Brooklyn, Queens, Midtown Manhattan, and Staten Island to schedule a free consultation with an attorney. 718-238-6500. That's 718-238-6500. And listen to Ask the Lawyer right here every Saturday evening at 6. Welcome back to Ask the Lawyer with Mike Connors. Got a question for Mike? Call him at 866-970-9622. That's 866-970-9622.
Okay, well, welcome back. Now, again, we're talking about the Battle of New Orleans today, and I thought to put us in the mood, we might go to the Johnny Horton song, Battle of New Orleans. Go ahead.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We looked down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Old Hickory said we could take them by surprise. If we didn't fire muskets till we looked them in the eye. We held our fire till we see their faces well. Then we opened up our squirrel guns and really gave them well. We fired our guns and the British kept coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it. Well, down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We fired our cannon till the barrel melted down. So we grabbed an alligator and we fought another round. We filled his head with cannonballs and powdered his behind. And when we touched the powder off, the gator lost his mind.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles. And they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay, so we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to get back into the battle in New Orleans with Ed Bars.
We all know someone who's been touched by cancer. It's the second leading cause of death, and it took the life of my father, John Wayne. But even in his final days, he was thinking about helping others and publicly campaigning to raise awareness about cancer. His courage and grit inspired our family to do everything we could to fight the Big C, as my dad called it. So we did something about it and founded the John Wayne Cancer Institute 35 years ago to advance life-saving research. Our discoveries are fundamentally changing the way cancer is treated around the world. Cures are within our reach, but we can't do it alone. I'm Patrick Wayne, and I'd be honored if you joined us in the fight against cancer. You can make a lasting legacy by helping to eradicate this deadly disease. Together, we can save lives. To learn more, visit jwcigiving.org. That's jwcigiving.org.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older and are finding it hard to pay off debt, or how about enjoying your retirement years with less stress, a government-insured reverse mortgage may be the answer or might be the perfect solution for you and your family. Hi, this is Frank Melia, a certified mortgage planner. I've been a mortgage specialist for over 20 years, and I've helped countless homeowners all over the tri-state area tap into a little or a lot of their home equity so they can use it right now. This past October, the federal government made changes to the reverse mortgage loan program. Give me a call now so our office can show you how these changes affect how much money you receive and how the annual mortgage insurance costs have decreased. My job is to help you find the best solutions for your retirement goals. I do this by educating homeowners with straightforward information and answers. It's free to call and speak with me, Frank Melia, to determine if this FHA program might be able to help you and your loved ones now. Call and speak with me right now. I'll answer your questions and help you decide if a reverse mortgage is right for you and your family. Make the call now, 888-943-2646, or try me on the internet at www.quanticbank.com/FMelia. Once again, call 888-943-2646, and you could be on your way to a stress-free retirement.
Frank Melia, NMLS number 62591. All loans provided by Quantic Bank, NMLS number 403503.
Welcome back to Ask the Lawyer with Mike Connors.
Welcome to the Connors Corner segment of Ask the Lawyer. With me right now is our national treasure, greatest battlefield guide in the history of the United States, Ed Bars. How are you today, sir?
Very good.
We've talked about every Civil War battle, I think, that the public is interested in. So we're going to change pace today. We're going to be talking about New Orleans, 1815, the Battle of New Orleans. What can you tell us about that battle?
All right, the battle. The United States, of course, declares war on Great Britain when Britain is seriously embarrassed with Bonaparte. Now, when Bonaparte runs into disaster after in Russia and the Battle of Leipzig, Bonaparte will abdicate for the first time and go be sent to the Isle of Elba.
where he'll remain 100 days and then escape. Now, as soon as Bonaparte is dealt with, the British decide that the United States should be punished for their actions of declaring war on Britain when Britain is in a serious conflict with Bonaparte. So the British now have a lot of unemployed soldiers that have been very successful, particularly in Spain, against the French forces in Spain, led by Jerome Bonaparte, who is not any type of a general like his brother. So the British decide they're going to send three expeditions, made up largely of veterans of the Peninsula Campaign, to punish the United States for their declaration of war on them at a bad time. They're going to send one force of about 10,000 men to reinforce the British forces in Canada, and they're going to advance southward by way of the Lake Champlain Gateway. A second force will be sent to Chesapeake Bay to operate against Washington and our forces there. And the third force, largely made up of the ones that are presumed to be successful against Washington, will move against New Orleans. The British threat to, by way of Lake Champlain, will be neutralized in mid-September. The British threat that brought them to Washington and then defeat at Baltimore will then move against New Orleans. New Orleans, of course, is located 80 miles up the Mississippi River from its mouth, and it's a backbone of America, and it had been settled by the Spanish. The French had then acquired it from the Spanish, and they had sold the Louisiana Purchase to us in 1803. So we have New Orleans, which controls all the rivers draining a third of the continent. They will board the ships at Bordeaux, and they will arrive off the Gulf Coast of the United States at the beginning of the first week of December 1814, actually off Ship Island. They're going to operate against New Orleans. First thing they're going to try to do is bribe this pirate John Lafitte, who is under indictment in Louisiana for piracy, and he will turn down the British offer of him cooperating. So the British Navy is going to try to approach New Orleans by way from the west, from the Gulf of Mexico, by way of Lake Bourne. We have a small fleet of gunboats guarding the passes through the Wrigley's into Lake Pontchartrain, five gunboats, and there will be an engagement on the 14th and 15th day of December. The British will load 100 and will take 45 longboats, about a gun in each, a carronade in the bow of each one, and they're going to attack and to try and capture the American gunboat fleet. They are successful. By the 15th, the American gunboats, they're watching the route into New Orleans to the Wrigley's and Lake Pontchartrain, have been captured. The British then are going to move their troops from their base that they've established at Ship Island and go through a chain of waterways that connect the area of south and east of New Orleans with the Mississippi. It's one of these many channels they have. So that's the route they're going to do. They've got a lot of hard work because they're going to have to move their men in small boats. Now, at this time, Andrew Jackson had moved against Pensacola, which had been occupied by the British, and he's got to get his tail back to New Orleans as fast as he can. So he is going to be back in New Orleans in mid-December. And he is going to be bringing men all the way from Kentucky and Tennessee by boat down the river to join his forces in New Orleans. Now, his force in New Orleans will be a hodgepodge of people. They will include a detachment of Marines, United States Marines. They will have two regular Army units, and then they will have... It turned out the free men of color. The Spanish and the French have had no trouble with organizing free men of color in the militia. So there are going to be two battalions of free men of color that are going to collect to go with those people they brought down from Tennessee and Kentucky. And there are going to be detached Marines, two regular Army units, and Jackson is beginning to cobble together. He'll then tell John Lafitte, how about you joining us? And John Lafitte will turn over his older brother, Dominic Yu. Now, he'll be very important manning one of the seven batteries the Americans are going to establish. The British are moving through on Bayou Bienvenue, and they've reached Belair Plantation. Belair Plantation would be on the Mississippi River about 6 miles downstream from where they'll fight the Battle of New Orleans, or as they call it down in New Orleans, Chalmette. So the Jackson decides to strike a first blow. The British have landed at Belair Plantation. Belair has escaped and told them they're there, and Jackson turns out about 5,000 men. Militia that's come down from Tennessee and Kentucky, the free men of color, Cajuns, mixed bags, some regulars, and he leaves downtown New Orleans on the afternoon of the 23rd. He's going to march southward and attack the British force that has come through on Bayou Bienvenue and is assembling at Belair Plantation. Belair Plantation will be about 15 miles downstream from New Orleans. The levees there at the time bounding the Mississippi, but they're not these giant levees like you see now. So Jackson is going to get down there and launch a surprise attack on the advanced British contingent that is going into camp near Belair Plantation, which is about 2 or 3 miles downstream from where the battle will be fought, which will be on the boundary between the McCartney Plantation and Chalmette Plantation. Now, again, there is a drainage ditch that runs inland from near the McCartney Plantation in a straight line into the swamp area about 1,000 yards back. Jackson is going to, that's where the battle is going to be fought. But Jackson will try to surprise the British at the battle at Belair Plantation, 3 miles further downstream. He gains the surprise, but the British hold up, and Jackson will fall back to the McCartney Plantation and the Rodriguez Canal. The Rodriguez Canal is this drainage canal that connects the Mississippi River with the swamp area about 1,000 yards inland. So Jackson decides, here's where I'm going to fight the British. He is going to also have to have a force immediately across the river from where Rodriguez Canal drains into the Mississippi. And there he'll have a couple of gunboats, and he's going to put his militia over on that side. That would be on the south side of the river. And he's going to throw up nine batteries along and use cotton bales to as a breastwork, and they have the Rodriguez Canal as a water barrier in front of them, and it's going to extend roughly about 650 yards from the swamp area and to where it drains into the Mississippi River. And there he's going to position his eight batteries. These are going to be manned he has about 12 cannon. They're going to be positioned along the Rodriguez Canal behind the cotton bale barricades, and they will be numbered very imaginarily 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. They're scattered probably about 50 yards between each one. They do have a small readout out in front of Battery 1. So he's got his men working hard on these defenses. The British are continuing to carry their way through. Now, the British commander, it will be Everett Packingham. He is going to be a short-tailed relative of Wellington. He has very little of Wellington's ability. He is 36 years old, and he will arrive at Belair Plantation along about the 21st or 22nd day of December. So they're going to Jackson decides he's already attacked them once that surprise attack when the British were at Belair Plantation, and it made him very nervous. And that of course had been before he had fallen back and established his fortified line along the Rodriguez Canal between the Chalmette Plantation and the McCartney Plantation. It's going to be very smooth ground in front of him, extending out, if you've ever been down there, out to where the National Cemetery is, which is for Civil War dead. So the British are going to bring their artillery in. They got a hell of a job ferrying their artillery in. The British will make a reconnaissance to see how strong Jackson's position is on the 28th. They find it is quite strong, and they don't fare very well. The next engagement will be on the first day of January, New Year's Day. The British have positioned their artillery, and their rockets, which are about 1,000 yards from Jackson's line. Jackson has his defenses completed. He has his guns mounted. He has lost one of his gunboats in the engagement back on the 23rd. And they're going to have an artillery duel. And believe it or not, our people get the upper hand on the British in the artillery duel on the first day of January. The British now are establishing their position. They're separated by about 1,000 yards. The ground is right between the British position and the Rodriguez Canal and Jackson's cotton bale barricade is about 800 yards. It's as flat as if you play pool, it's as flat as a pool table.
Ed, we have to take a short break. You're listening to Ask the Lawyer with me, Mike Connors. We're talking to the legendary Ed Barrs about the Battle of New Orleans. Back in a couple of minutes.
Hello, this is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. Adult stem cell research is nothing new. It has been going on for decades and, in fact, has proven helpful in treating various diseases. In the process of this research, nobody has to be killed in order to obtain the stem cells. Embryonic stem cell research, on the other hand, only began in 1998 and does involve killing a new human life in order to obtain the cells. The number of diseases that have been successfully treated with embryonic stem cells is zero. They have shown no medical benefit. And even if they did, such activity is immoral. The end does not justify the means. Adult stem cells have treated various forms of leukemia, sickle cell disease, anemia, and carcinoma. Embryonic stem cells have succeeded in nothing. This is Father Frank Pavone, National Director of Priests for Life.
I have children. How can I protect them if something happens?
Will my assets be lost if I go into a nursing home?
We have property.
How will it affect the ones still here?
Who will help us take care of Grandma?
These questions can be answered by calling 718-238-6500 for a free consultation from Connors & Sullivan Attorneys at Law, providing dedicated, caring, and highly responsive legal services. They're focused on issues that matter to you: protection of your family, preservation of your assets, and respect of your wishes with dignity.
That's all I want from a lawyer, making it easier for my children.
Call 718-238-6500. Get a free consultation. Connors & Sullivan's clients don't get lost in the cracks. They have dedicated attorneys who know their clients and the issues that matter most to them. Connors & Sullivan's estate planning, elder law, and probate attorneys work closely with every client. Don't leave behind problems for your family. Call 718-238-6500 and get a free consultation today.
Connors & Sullivan. Plan now for later.
Welcome back to Ask the Lawyer with Mike Connors.
Welcome back to the Connors Corner segment of Ask the Lawyer. We're talking to the legendary Ed Barrs about the Battle of New Orleans, which was fought this time of year in 1815. We've been talking about the prelude to the battle, and now Ed's going to tell us about General Pakenham and his plans to attack Andrew Jackson's defenses at New Orleans.
Pakenham decides, I'm going to attack on the 8th day of January. So he is going to attack. He is going to dig a canal from the headwaters of Benvenue Bayou. That's the waterway the British had used to get their cannons and their people, the 23 miles from the Gulf of Mexico to there. So he's going to decide, we're going to put Colonel Thornton, probably one of the best men the British have, is going to command about 1,000 men. They're going to dam the outlet to the canal going to Valera Plantation, and they're going to let the water build up so that he get enough water to use it to cut the levee and get their longboats out into the Mississippi River. They have bad luck during the night of the early morning hours of the 8th, the dam across the dividing Bayou Benvenue from the canal bursts, and the water that's backing up behind it falls. So they're going to have a hard time getting their 40-some landing vessels down the canal and out into the Mississippi River. The Mississippi has a strong current. They have to wade across, and their job is to attack the American force that Jackson has placed on the south side of the Mississippi, just opposite Battery 1. And that would be the extreme right flank of Jackson's line. And they want to cooperate, but they have a difficulty of getting across the river. The Mississippi is a powerful current, and that means the British force under Thornton is not going to be able to cooperate with Pakenham's force in the big attack. Now, the attack is going to be, they are going to send a small force into the swamp area, the Cypress Swamp, which would be which is north of the left flank of Jackson's line, and they're going to Packenham is going to form his column into assault. Gibbs is going to be on the right with veterans who've been battling Napoleon and his people for a long time. Gibbs has been there for a while, and his men are going to advance in the area just south, just north of the Cypress Swamp, and they're going to have Colonel Mullen. You can have, if you have your worst employee, let's put Pat Fauci will be Colonel Mullen. He is the colonel of the 44th Regiment. Now, the 44th Regiment has a key role. The British, under the cover of darkness, had deposited a number of ladders, long and short ladders, and fascines. Fascines are bundles of cane. They're bound together, and you can throw into water and get across. So they positioned them in an abandoned battery. Colonel of the 44th British Regiment of Foot has got a very crucial role. His job is to send his men just when, before it gets light, goes forward where they behind the redoubt, where they deposit their scaly ladders and their fascines, because these guys that are going to attack are going to need those ladders and those fascines if they can get across Rodriguez Canal. Now, Rodriguez Canal is about 15 feet wide. It's about 5 feet deep, and then on the opposite side, the Jackson side of the canal, and about 2 foot back from the edge of the canal, Jackson has sewn up a line of cotton bale. Used cotton bales to throw up a parapet, and along that parapet are where his cannons, his eight batteries are positioned. Particularly an important battery will be Battery 5, which is near the present day monument, because it has a big 18-pounder, and to the right of it is Battery 5. It has three guns in it, and then they have Battery 1, of course, is very near the Mississippi. So Gibbs's force is going to be on the right. Probably 30 or 40 yards to their right is the impassable area of the cedar thicket. Now, when they advance, they expect our friend, the 44th, to meet them with the fascines and the ladders. Well, the colonel is a little dense, and he hasn't located where they are, and they can't find them. When they find them, it's rather late, because the British have got tired. Gibbs has got tired of waiting, and he's begun his advance. So everything, and Gibbs he has begun his advance. Now the other column is is being spirited by the 93rd Regiment of Highlanders. They're tall, mean SOBs. They've been stationed in South Africa. They also have the light companies of the various infantry regiments. Now, the British infantry regiments were organized. Each British regiment has a light company. These are guys that are very nimble. They are like that young man that usually calls me up, and they're good with the bayonet. And they have the light companies of the other infantry regiments. They have, and start with the 53rd Regiment, and they're moving down the road that parallels the Mississippi River with just a very slight levee on their left. Gibbs has the main striking force. He's going to be on the right, but he's going to be dependent on getting those ladders and fascines that the colonel of the 44th Regiment of Foot is supposed to get. Later on, he'll be saying, if I survive the battle, I'm going to hang Morton from that tree right there, because he screwed everything up. And the advance starts. Now, the British plan to the force on the far side of the river has had trouble getting into position. And they miss, say, the a rocket fired by the main force on the opposite side of the river, and they will not be able to cooperate, even if they had been thinking about it. So they advance. So there's going to be no... So that means the people on the far side of the river, under Thornton, are not going to be able to seize the cannons that can fire across the river and enfilade the British right, which would be the Keene's column, which is moving down the road right adjacent to the river. So the British are moving. This is not, and they things are beginning, and they come under heavy fire. Gibbs is wondering, where the hell are those guys in the 44th Regiment of Foot? They're not around. We need our ladders. We need our fascines to get across the ditch. And they begin to take heavy casualties. Packingham is trying to coordinate them. He sees that Gibbs is in serious trouble. And he says he sends a message to the Colonel Dale of the 93rd Regiment of Scots. He says, I want you to leave the column, moving down the road adjacent to the river, have them move across the field, and come to the support of Gibbs. And so Dale starts off moving, does an oblique to the right, and starts moving across. Now they're in big trouble. They're now within range of Jackson's guns. Jackson has no artillery up. The Brits have no guns up there with them, and Jackson's guns have opened fire, firing canister and grape at a short rally. And the heads of the columns are beginning to melt away, predictive Gibbs column on the far right. As Dale with the 93rd cuts across on an oblique to join Gibbs, they find out, and that's where they're in big trouble as they begin shooting them down. Now, Jackson is only going to have 15 casualties here, maybe 20 at the most. The British are going to have over 2,000 casualties of their 5,000 men. So they're, and the only British troops that are going to get into the Union, into the British defenses, and there will be the defenses held by the Marines and the 7th Infantry are the spearhead of the Light Infantry that are marching down the road paralleling the levee. They get in there and hold the redoubt for a few minutes, but they're unsuccessful. Their commander will be badly wounded. Packenham has now gone forward to try and straighten everything out, and he's going to get himself mortally wounded. Gibbs's column comes in, and it's now melting away in front of Batteries 5, the three guns in Battery 5. Dominic Yu is having a field day, and within about 20 minutes, the British attack is obviously being repulsed. Gibbs is mortally wounded. Packenham is mortally wounded. Dale is going to be mortally wounded, so he's not going to be able to hang the commander of the 44th Infantry that had screwed up. So they're going to fall back. Packenham's last orders to his reserve, commanded by Colonel Lambert, is we're falling back, and I think if you commit your reserve, it'll be sending good money after bad money. So within about 30 minutes of hard fighting, if you forget the earlier movements, probably 2 hours, the battle is over. And New Orleans has been saved. Jackson has become a hero. The British will get together and discuss. Packenham will die that night. Now, good thing, what they do in those days to preserve well-known and high-ranking people, to get them back so they can bury them without them, decompose them, they put them in a keg of brandy or wine. So they'll put him in a keg of wine to send him back for Wellington's sister, who is now a widow, to bury her husband. So the British are going to have 2,000 casualties out of the 6,000 men committed to the attack. Meanwhile, the British, Thornton has finally got moving. And by the time Thornton moves, British on the have failed in their attack on the Rodriguez Canal line of Jackson. The militia over on the far side of the river naturally panic. Thornton captures their position, captures their cannon, which they abandon, but the British decide, have decided we're not going to try another attack. We're going to withdraw from the area. So they begin withdrawing on the way they came. Now, an interesting thing about the Battle of New Orleans is on Christmas Eve in Ostend, France, in Ostend, Belgium, British and American representatives had met, and they had signed a treaty ending the war. Of course, the treaty, if the British had won the battle, Parliament would have never approved the treaty. And since we won the battle, our Congress is very welcome to, is very eager to approve the treaty. So if Jackson had lost, undoubtedly New Orleans would have fallen. The British would have controlled the major city at the mouth of the Mississippi, and they would have they would have also demanded the property they've already occupied in the United States, particularly in northeastern Maine, as booty. So the Battle of New Orleans is over. It's going to make Jackson a national hero, make him a president of the United States, and the Brits have... So we feel pretty good about ourselves because after having a very bad first 2 years of the War of 1812, we've ended with a great victory.
Ed Bars, thank you for bringing history to life.
Okay, so, Beth, you learn anything about Battle of New Orleans?
I learned a lot, and I even grew up part of my life in New Orleans. So, I always focused on Jean Lafitte, you know, the romantic pirate that comes to everyone's aid. Oh, my goodness. And remember the movie?
Yes. Not the best movie of all time. And not Charlton Heston's best, but we still love Charlton Heston.
We still do with that hair. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. No, but that's romantic times and Jackson Square, like I say, we would go. That was a big day. You know, it was just lovely. I loved New Orleans.
Okay. Now, by the way,
the Saints.
Some of you that were, you know, referenced there, he talked about Pat Fousey. Pat Fousey is a member of the Civil War Roundtable who played A.P. Hill in the movie Gettysburg, and that was Ed's homage to Pat Fousey. That was another part that he should play in the future after doing such an excellent job on A.P. Hill, who occasionally made mistakes during the Civil War. Now,
I have something very important to say.
Okay.
Remember, anybody that listens to the show, remember that from Batman and Robin, Robin said that he started making some dog food because they rescued dogs and they felt it was important for them to have good nutrition. Well, Mike Connors there ordered some dog food, and it is world-class canine nutrition from Gentle Giants. We got some. He got chicken and beef for our precious Otto, and Otto loves it. So I don't know how much, I don't know if he's getting better nourishment, but he did not like his other dog food, and he loves this dog food. So we're going to have to send a note of thank you and say we love this dog food. So thank you. Thank you, Pop-Pop, for getting Otto some good, good dog food.
Okay, well, you know, that was Burt Ward. Look on the Internet, Burt Ward's dog food or Gentle Giant or whatever. Now, he claims that, you know, it extends dog's life expectancy. So that we have a long, you know, we have to figure that one out. We have hopefully a long time before we figure that one out for Otto. But Otto does like the food, so it's, you know, another one of those people that has gotten a product.
You know, he's doing good stuff, and he's saying 90% of it's meat, and then the other stuff, you know, they're not stuffing it with grains and stuff. So go for it.
Okay, so if we didn't spend a lot of time on estate planning tonight, so if you want to talk about estate planning, give us a call at 718-238-6500. 718-238-6500. We'll see you next week at the same place. David Kincaid is telling us to say goodnight.
Bye-bye, everybody.
We're gathered here on hallowed ground. Voices raised, heads bowed down. We're gathered here on hallowed ground to sing this soul away.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.